the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. Here we are. We have marched into the month of December. It's that time of year when the holidays are upon us and when everybody gains at least 50 pounds. The exchange of gifts with friends and family. It's also that time of the year, believe it or not, when we talk about giving to others who are less fortunate. So today, discussion is about charitable giving and passing on a legacy to your heirs, at the same time maintaining family harmony and ensuring the smooth transition of the intergenerational wealth and values.
Yeah, I wanted to cover charitable giving today, John, because it's a great tax-saving strategy that also it does a lot of public good, because we're talking about charitable gifting. But there are many ways to do this when we think of charitable gifting, from making cash donations, let's say, you know, like, for example, tithing to your church or your favorite charity, or in other ways, donation of assets, especially those that have appreciated immensely.
Well, what about the tax implications of making charitable gifts? That's one of the things that people always examine when they're discussing this.
Yeah, I mean, if you're making a simple cash gift, it's pretty straightforward. You write a check for, you know, $1,000, $10,000, whatever it is. Although you should check with a tax advisor, because you want to be careful with AMT or the possible loss of part of your deduction as a result of the Tax Reform Act of 2012. We've talked about that on a number of issues. But if you're donating an appreciated asset, think of Mark Zuckerberg and, for example, his Facebook stock. Maybe you were fortunate enough to buy Apple stock or Google, whatever it is. Or maybe you have appreciated real estate. Real estate gets a little bit more complicated. But it's really, and I want to stress this, advisable to check with an advisor, because there are great benefits to doing this. But the laws are very complex, and especially if you're donating appreciated property like real estate with debt associated with it. So by all means, at least talk to your advisor before making gifts of appreciated property. I don't care if it's a stock, a closely held business, or an interest in a business, or real assets.
Now, I know, Jim, in the past, you've talked about certain kind of tax trusts. This really interests me. Tax trusts where you can make charitable gifts, get a deduction for it, and at the same time still maintain an interest, or at least receive some of the benefit from the asset or the gift that is made. Now, that's intriguing, because usually when something is tangled up with taxes, you lose a certain amount of control over it.
Yeah, this is something that was set up by Congress, and it was, John, actually to encourage gifting, the kind of gifting that you have seen so many of these wealthy people do. But you're referring here to something we call a charitable remainder trust. Now, there are a number of ways this is done. And in many cases, it's done with a wealth replacement trust. But this trust itself has its own complexities, and it really depends on the goals that are defined by the donors. In this case, let's say a husband, a wife, or maybe a surviving spouse.
All right. So let's talk about the use of charitable trust. How does it work? That's the first thing. Like, is it some big complicated mechanism that then is going to cause me a lot of grief? But assuming that it doesn't, what are the advantages of it?
What a charitable trust does is it allows an individual to make a substantial deferred gift to a favored charity, but they retain a right to receive payments or income from the trust. So under the right circumstances, the use of, let's say, a charitable trust offers all kinds of multiple tax advantages to individuals who make the gift of the appreciated property. And the reason it's a deferred gift, and that's where, hence, it gets its name, a charitable remainder trust, because during the lifetime, usually during the lifetime of the donor, and it may even be a succeeding generation, the family still has an income or a retained income interest in the trust. So the charity is going to get the gift or the asset somewhere down the road based on the life expectancy of the donor, or maybe even a succeeding generation if that is used.
And the advantages of doing this, the tax advantages?
Well, I mean, let's make this simple since this is a podcast. Let's say you have an appreciated asset. Let's say you had the foresight to buy Netflix, Apple, Google, Facebook, whatever it is. But let's say that if you sold the stock, assuming, you know, it's going to be in a high tax bracket, let's assume that you have, in this case, $1 million of capital gains. Now, here's the problem. The federal tax on that $1 million of capital gains is 23.8%. And here in California, based on the various tax rates, they would be up from 9.3 to 11.3 on that $1 million. So you would owe $238,000 in federal capital gains taxes. And then you would owe the state of California $102,000. So John, on that $1 million capital gain, you owe the government and the governor $338,000. In this case, the owner of the stock would lose that $338,000 in taxes, so obviously you have less money to invest. There could also be, depending on the size of your estate, there could be estate taxes down the road that are as high as 40%. So if the $1 million stock is put in a charitable trust, the trustee could turn around, sell the stock, pay no capital gains or state income taxes. In addition, and here's where it gets really nice, in addition to the capital gains tax savings, the donor would also receive a substantial tax deduction for making the gift that could be then used to offset, let's say, your ordinary income and save on income taxes. So by donating the stock to a charitable trust, John, the donor would save three kinds of taxes: the capital gains taxes, and the example I just gave, the $338,000, you wouldn't have to pay that. There would be income tax savings, as you would get a $1 million deduction or part of that, because the charity is not going to get it right away. And it gets a little complex in terms of how much of a deduction you get based on your age, when the charity gets it, the amount of income that you get from the trust. But there is income tax savings, so that's a second tax. And if your estate is large enough, you could actually save on estate taxes. So, you know, think of this: capital gains taxes of 23.8%. Here in California, the state income taxes are 13.3. So you're almost talking about 37% in income taxes. Then a tax deduction, depending on your tax bracket. Let's say today you can be in a 44% federal bracket. You could be in a 13.3 here in California. So there's 57% in income tax savings on the amount that you can deduct against your income. And then there's the estate taxes that you would also save, which could be as high as 40%. So you can see here, there's a lot of ways, actually three different ways, you can benefit from tax savings here.
Okay, now, as I mentioned before, usually you lose control when you do tax donations, etc. But what about the use of the asset? I mean, does the owner lose his control? What if they want to earn income during their lifetime?
Well, this is where we talk about the charitable remainder trust, because if you were just to donate, let's say, an asset outright to charity, yes, you would avoid the capital gains, you would avoid the estate taxes, you would get the income tax deductions as well. But suppose, for example, in this case, the $1 million, let's say you were thinking, well, gee, I don't want to pay all these taxes. I like the income tax benefits, but I also want to, you know, get some income on it and live off this during my lifetime. That's the great advantage of donating assets to a charitable trust, because at the time the gift is made, usually you take a fixed percentage of the asset value each year. So in this case, let's say you could take a 3% rate of return. And in this case, under $1 million, 3%, the donor would get $30,000 a year, or 3% in terms of whatever the value of that asset would grow. There are other types of charitable remainder trust where you actually get a fixed amount each year that's set. So there are a number of ways that you can do this, depending on the income needs of the donor. The other thing you don't forgo, let's say the stock was sold, and in this case, the money was reinvested in blue chip stocks that pay more of an income, you know, let's say utility stocks or consumer staple stocks, energy stocks, where the dividend yields are 3, 4, and 5%. You would also get that 3% distribution rate on the value of the trust. So as the assets were growing, let's say, for example, You donate $1 million today, and 10 years from now, the value of that trust is worth, let's say, $2 million. Well, you'd be getting 3% of the $2 million, not the original $1 million. So in that case, when it grew to $2 million, you'd be getting $60,000 a year. Actually, I had a client, John, where they sold their business to a public company in 1999 for $4 million in public stock. We transferred that stock to a charitable remainder trust. We avoided the capital gains. We also got substantial income tax deductions, which were used over the years to draw down the IRA and minimize the taxes. But we also avoided $1.2 million in federal and state income taxes at the time we set up the trust. Back then, we set up a 4% distribution rate, and originally that was $160,000 a year. Today, John, that trust is valued at over $10 million, and the annual income distribution is over $400,000 a year. So not only did they save the $1.2 million, in this case, on taxes up front, when they avoided the capital gains, they also saved substantially on income tax deductions that they got, which they used to offset the drawdown of his IRA. And then on top of that, they're going to save substantial amount of assets, 40% on the estate taxes. And today, his widow is receiving over $400,000 in income from that trust that was originally set up at $4 million.
Okay, in the case we're talking here, where, say, $4 million was donated in appreciated stock, and then it eventually matures to greater than $10 million. But if I understand how this works, the assets go to a charity and not to the heirs. Now, what do you do if you want the heirs to receive part of the assets from this?
Well, I mean, there's several ways that you can structure this. The distribution could be extended beyond, let's say, a husband and wife, their lifetime to the heirs. Now, the further out that you extend when the charity receives it, the lower is going to be your upfront income tax deduction. You're still going to save on the capital gains. That's still there. You're still going to save on estate taxes. That's still there. But the income tax deduction that you're going to get up front would be less. So say, for example, you had a couple kids. You could say, all right, in this charitable trust, as long as the husband and wife live, they're going to get this check in the case of the $1 million, the 3% of that. But also, I want it to go to my two children during their lifetime. You could do that. The other method used that we do sometimes, in fact, we do this a lot, is we set up a wealth replacement trust, and you'll see that in the case study that we're doing today, which is funded with insurance. It's an insurance policy. Normally, you get a last survivor policy based on the husband and wife. When the last spouse passes away, the life insurance proceeds go to the heirs income tax free and estate tax free. So at the death of the donors, the charitable trust assets would go to the charity, not to the kids. However, the wealth replacement assets, let's say the proceeds from the life insurance and the wealth replacement trust, would go income tax free and estate tax free to the heirs. So basically, you could almost replace the asset. So it's a very powerful combination. We often see this used by super wealthy families, from the Kennedys to other wealth legacy families that we read about or hear about in the news. It's a real favorite tool of mine, especially when you get into larger estates, because there's so many tax advantages that come about. You save on capital gains, you save on income taxes, you save on estate taxes, and also, depending on the goals of the donor, you can extend the payments to the heirs or simply replace the assets through a wealth replacement trust.
And why do you use this type of a strategy? Would it be a fair guess to say it's normally when there are major assets or capital gains?
Yeah, I would say if you want to just, you know, donate $20,000 of stock or something like that, you're probably just better off donating it to the charity. This strategy is probably really appropriate when there are substantial capital gains, and usually when you get to the larger estates. Once you get beyond $10.8 million, you're going to be subject to 40% estate taxes, not to mention the capital gains taxes. So there's a lot of planning that needs to be involved, from tax planning, estate planning, investment planning. So a lot of thought needs to be given on setting this up, because of all of the tax and investment implications I talked about. I mean, we have three different kind of taxes, capital gains taxes, income taxes, estate taxes, not to mention the investment strategy you're going to want to choose to make sure that, you know, the assets are preserved during the donor's lifetime, that the income's there and that you're going to receive the income. So, John, a lot of planning, but I would say, you know, this is really appropriate for those individuals that really have large estates and especially large appreciation in an asset, usually a stock. It could be a business, a piece of real estate, but substantial capital gains that you want to avoid.
And I would imagine here that if you do have substantial capital gains or maybe a large estate, this is definitely a strategy that you should explore, but you also want to make sure you explore this with professionals. This is not a do-it-yourself kit type of strategy unless you happen to be a tax attorney. All right, let's move on to related topics, which is teaching heirs about creating a legacy. And this is important because if you pass certain amounts of wealth off to your heirs and they don't know what to do with it, they may just simply destroy it in a short amount of time.
Jason Stevens always got what he wanted.
Do you have any idea who I am?
But his grandfather had other plans.
So what's in the box?
Your inheritance.
Now, if he wants to discover the ultimate gift...
I want to give you a series of gifts. Are you failing any way? You get nothing.
He'll have to go farther.
Hey, city boy.
You don't look like you worked a day in your life.
I do manual labor for a month?
Try harder.
Don't begin to live until you lost everything.
No, no, please!
And give more.
Don't you come back at the end of the month with one true friend
than he ever thought possible.
So this is hell.
I've been watching you. You're not a real bum.
Sorry to disturb you.
Hey, I need a friend.
Based on the best-selling novel by Jim Stovall.
Are you Jason's friend?
We're like this.
He's weird, isn't he?
He's a good weird.
Take that money and spend it on someone experiencing a real problem. Put yourself in their shoes.
James Garner, Brian Dennehy, Drew Fuller, and Academy Award nominee Abigail Breslin.
What's your dream?
My dream was a perfect day, and I'm just finishing it.
The ultimate gift.
I don't know if I have my own dream, but I do know I can help others fulfill theirs.
You know, that is one of my favorite movies. It was The Ultimate Gift, and I highly recommend a great movie to watch during the holidays. It was basically about a billionaire oil man who basically his children were sort of like trust fund kids. They weren't really doing much. They weren't being responsible. And his real hope was with his grandson, but his grandson was wealthy because of gifts he had made. And what he really wanted to do was teach him things about friendship, about helping others, about the value of work. And it's a movie, John. I actually have several copies. I usually get a copy of this movie and I give it to my clients to watch when they're considering legacy planning, especially when you're talking about charitable gifting, a charitable remainder trust, or let's say creating a legacy, as we'll talk about in today's case study. I mean, there's so many instructional qualities to this movie. And I highly recommend it. If you are one of those fortunate individuals where you have a large estate, this film, along with the book, Preparing Heirs, gives you some really good guidelines to consider when you want to create a legacy and a fortune and you have immense wealth or a large degree of wealth. You want to create that wealth and make sure it becomes a legacy that's passed on to future generations and remains. We discussed, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and I'll talk about this with my interview with Roy Williams, author of Preparing Heirs. And it really surprised me, the Vanderbilts, the original founder of the Vanderbilt fortune, considered one of the wealthiest men in the United States in his day. By the time that wealth got down to the third generation in the 70s, there wasn't even one Vanderbilt that was worth $1 million. You know, picture somebody like Bill Gates or Warren Buffett or Mark Zuckerberg By the time it got down to the third generation, there's nothing. Not one of them is a millionaire. And so we're going to be talking about that with our guest preparing heirs. But it's one of those movies I highly recommend. It's called The Ultimate Gift. They even have a website. It's a fabulous, uplifting movie about tremendous wealth and the good it can do with instructions.
Time for our case study to demonstrate some of the principles we have been discussing here. As with all of our case studies, they're based on real life events, but we change the names to protect the privacy of the people involved. So who's on deck this week?
Yeah, this is really a case study that involves legacy planning. The parents, we'll call them Robert and Helen Grant, $16 million estate, but they had two sons that started a business. It was a software business. And the value of that business, John, is probably, I would say, worth over 30, 40 million. It's still going strong. So obviously, not only did the parents have tax problems, both income tax problems and estate tax problems, but also their two sons who started the business together, they're going to have income tax and estate problems. And the last thing they needed is to inherit mom and dad's money. So basically, we started out with $16 million. And we set up, basically, in this case, a generation skipping trust. Now, to understand the way this works, most people are familiar with an A and a B trust. What happens is when the first spouse passes away, usually you split the trust in two trusts. Typical AB trust, $5,430,000 is where the exemption is today, meaning you can pass $5,430,000 estate tax free to your heirs. Now, what we did in this is obviously the two sons didn't need mom and dad's money. They were wealthier than their parents, making more money, had an estate that was twice, if not three times as large as their parents. So what we did is we set up a generation skipping trust. So on the death of the first spouse, the exemption amount, currently $5,430,000, or the B trust, would go and skip the two sons, and it would go to the grandchildren. So that's $5,430,000. Now, on the death of the first spouse, assuming $16 million, that would leave $10,570,000 in the A trust. Now, when the second spouse dies, that spouse also gets an exemption of $5,430,000. So whatever that exemption amount is going to be going to the grandchildren in a trust set up for the grandchildren. So basically, you're going to have $10,860,000 that will bypass the two sons and it'll go directly to the grandchildren, skipping one generation. By the way, this was what was used in combination with the wealth replacement trust that was used in Jacqueline Onassis's estate. Her estate at death was valued somewhere around $200 million. She bypassed her children and set up that estate so it goes to her grandchildren. And that's why, even though Joe Kennedy died, I think in the late 60s, early 70s, I'm not sure when, it's why you have 59 families today and the Kennedy fortune is still there because of this type of planning. Let's get back to this case. So when the first spouse passes away, the amount of the exemption, the B trust, in the Grant's case, $5,430,000 is going to go into a generation skipping trust. That leaves roughly about $10.6 million in the A trust. Assuming Mrs. Grant is going to be the survivor, when she passes away, her exemption is $5,430,000. That will go to the grandchildren, and then the remaining, there will be a $2 million estate tax, roughly about $2 million, and $3 million will go to their two sons. So what we're doing, John, here is we're creating a legacy. and we're talking with the two sons, we may do something even similar because they like the idea of creating multi-generational wealth. You know, they saw the movie. I gave the grands the movie, The Ultimate Gift, which was a big motivator in terms of coming up with this plan. So we're actually doing three generations. And John, it's not hard to conceive. By the time it gets down to the grandchildren, you could be talking about a $100 million estate with the grandchildren, or even going beyond a generation beyond that, very much like you see the Rockefellers and the Kennedys today. This is kind of the way that you set up these larger estates and create the legacy of these families. And it really takes a lot of planning. It takes the kids getting along, understanding what is being done here. There's got to be family unity. There's got to be a statement of values, which I'll get in when I talk with my author and guest, Roy Williams, next. But here you have, John, a trust that is being set up that will pass assets that will continue to grow and grow over the years and become, well, it's already a large fortune today, but become even a greater fortune down the road. So whenever you hear about these families like the Rockefellers, the Fords, the Kennedys, this is one of the tools that they use to pass on this kind of generational wealth.
And speaking of passing it on, coming up next, Roy Williams is our guest, preparing heirs, five steps to successful transfers of wealth to your heirs as lifetime income continues at financialsense.com. You know, a lot of times you wonder, given especially tax structures and everything else, people had great estates and how they were able to successfully pass them on. And then there were also other cases, like we've talked about, where it really resulted in disaster. The estate was just squandered away within a generation or two. And with planning, you can do what you need to do.
Yeah, and as we talked about there with Roy Williams, it's not just the tax planning. There's got to be family unity. There's got to be a purpose behind things. And all of that goes together because, you know, in the case of the Vanderbilts, there wasn't that unity and purpose. And so the wealth was dissipated. The second generation dissipated most of it. There wasn't much left by the time you got to the third generation. So like the case study that we were talking about, the Grants, you're talking about, John, the way things are set up right now, that someday this legacy is going to be over $100 million for a future generation. I mean, think of all the good and purpose that there is behind it. So it's more than just tax planning that goes into it. So, you know, if you are fortunate enough to be in that situation, I recommend Roy Williams's book, Preparing Heirs, Five Steps to a Successful Transition of Family Wealth and Values. And I also recommend the movie, The Ultimate Gift. It is just a fabulous movie. You'll love it. It's a great movie to watch during the holidays. I watch it every Christmas time. It's just an uplifting, great, great movie that I'm sure that you'll really appreciate and may inspire you the way it inspired the author who wrote the book on which the movie was based. Well, in the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense. or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.